Committee of the Whole will please come to order. I've been handed a note by the good speaker that would like to point out two hours of debate resulting in six bills finished. And just a note, we have 20 hours of floor time left until crossover, roughly. And that screaming that you can hear in the distance is the sound of bills that are dying a terrible, unnatural death. So, anyway, that being said, our next bill for consideration is House Bill 81. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill number 81, from Select Natural Resource Funding, an act relating to the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Funding Act, providing for funding of large projects under that act, specifying large projects approved for funding in 2011, amending funding and timing for specified previously approved large projects, requiring specified conservation easements to include the state of Wyoming as a third-party beneficiary, requiring certifications regarding kickbacks and gifts, providing for reversion of funds, and providing for an effective date. There are two reports here. Mr. Chairman, Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 81, Large Project Funding, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Blevins, Davison, Freeman, Halverson, Crone, V. Perinan. Those who voted no, Representatives Gay, Hutchins, and Yagi, signed by Representative Davison, Chairman. Further reviewed by your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, with the recommendation that do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye were Representative Burkhart, Escobel, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stebson. Those who voted no, Representative Wallace, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Davison?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 81 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Amendment 1, and I will turn the time over to our good floor leader. I think the second one's from Appropriations.
Yes, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that's correct. So
you only have to explain one.
So, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, this is, ladies and gentlemen, I don't want to burn up a lot of time on this unless somebody, if somebody has a real issue, then we'll do that. But these are projects that are initially submitted to and vetted by the Board of the Wildlife Trust Fund. They go and inspect every project. It's a very dedicated board with some people that have professional backgrounds that coincide with the kind of work that's involved in these. And they vet all the projects and make the initial cut as to the projects that are worthwhile and the structure of the projects and all that sort of thing. Then that board meets with the Select Natural Resource Funding Committee, and the Natural Resource Funding Committee is given a complete review of all those, and then if approved by the Select Natural Resource Funding Committee, that's the committee that brings the appropriations to the floor. And this only includes large projects, which are $200,000 or more. They do have a rule that's been in place, which I appreciate, for a long time, that says if previous appropriations plus the current appropriation or the current plus future are going to aggregate more than $200,000, they treat it as a large project and submit it through the Select Natural Resource Funding Committee. So this is a summation of all the projects that were approved by the Wildlife Trust Fund and then submitted to and approved by the Select Natural Resource Funding Committee. And the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 makes a correction on the name of the land trust, which is a technical correction. And then it adds Section 3, providing that each of the conservation easements will include the third party, or include the state of Wyoming as a third party beneficiary, such that the state of Wyoming has an enforceable interest in those. And there's been a little bit of concern. There's one land trust in Wyoming that's folding up. I'm not particularly concerned about that because they're charitable organizations, and in order to qualify as that, they have to agree that if they ever fold up, they have to transfer them to another charitable organization. But we don't know exactly where those are going. They're not being turned over to another one for a profit or for consideration or anything like that, but they may go to another one. This would ensure that no matter who holds the easement, the state of Wyoming will always be a third-party beneficiary to the easement and could enforce it if somebody else failed to. We feel like we need to do that to protect our trust fund money. And it also provides that if that easement is extinguished, well, I thought these things were permanent. How could they be extinguished? Well, they're still subject, for instance, to eminent domain. And so if an easement property were condemned, then this amendment also contains a provision that says that out of the condemnation money, the state would get a proportion of the damage awarded in the same proportion that the state put money in the conservation easement in the first place. So with that brief explanation, Mr. Chairman, I'll stand for questions and for other amendments.
Is there any question on the amendment? Call for the question. We're on standing committee amendment number one. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing committee number one, amendment number one has been adopted, and we are moving on to standing committee amendment number two. Chairman Hodgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move standing committee amendment number two to House Bill 81 and ask for your favorable consideration. Members, this is simply an error that was in the bill, mathematical error, and we're correcting that, so I'd urge your aye vote. Thank you.
You ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of standing committee amendment number two signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Standing committee amendment number two has been adopted, and we are back on the bill. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I stand for questions. If there's no questions, I'd call a question. But I see a question coming to the podium even as we speak.
Representative Wallace, and I will also quick point out that we also have a committee of the whole amendment from Representative Samwick. But Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had quite a discussion about this in our Appropriations Committee meeting, and following that, I asked for some research, and of course I was late in the game and didn't get exactly what I wanted, but I wanted to share with you all some facts about what we're looking at with these conservation easements. They trouble me greatly, primarily because of the use of public dollars for private gain. And it was expressed numerous times that the reason that this is necessary is because of the sage-grouse. So I thought, you know, it's worth taking a look at what we're really talking about here. So the sage-grouse core area represents about almost 25% of the state. 15,263,210 acres of Wyoming is encapsulated within that sage-grouse core habitat area. Now, I want you to pile that on top of the fact, you know, that's a mix of private and public lands. There's over 500,000 private acres inside that sage-grouse core habitat area. So, in the big picture of things, we know that 50% of our surface, roughly, is in some kind of government control. 80% of our minerals in the entire state is under some kind of government control, mostly federal. Then we've got this sage-grouse core habitat area soaking up another 500,000 private acres. And I think you can see where I'm going with this. Here we are. We've already got so much of our land resource base tied up in some kind of government control, which means it's not necessarily available to us or to our children or to our grandchildren for them to decide what they need to do with their resources that serves their purposes the best. And now we're using tax dollars to tie up even more. To say to our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren that you don't have a choice. There's one thing and one thing only that you can do with this land. And we're using tax dollars to devalue our resources. That's essentially what you're doing here. You're buying an easement to say that you are lessening the value. Now, maybe that's for a good purpose. Maybe it's not. But is it an appropriate use of public funds? I know that some of you have decided otherwise, but I can tell you that it's certainly a problem for me. And then you have the problem of, I asked the question, how many acres are tied up in these conservation easements so far? And the answer was around 30,000. But I can't find out whether those 30,000 acres are inside that sage grouse area or outside of that sage grouse area. And 30,000 acres, that's like less than 1%. Are we really doing that much by depriving our future generations of the full right to do whatever they want with their resources to suit their needs? Are we really doing that much in that grand scheme of things? I wonder. And then I wonder, you know, I flipped through these projects and if you'll flip open your bill, you'll see that first big project and the entity that is going to be holding that conservation easement. And I want you to go look them up on the internet and see what their rhetoric is. And I can tell you right now that what you're going to find is that particular outfit is against every single resource that we're developing and using and which is supporting our government here in Wyoming today. And then we hear that one of these outfits is going under and that all of their assets are going to be transferred to somebody else. Yeah, they might be a charitable organization, but what if their mission and purposes are absolutely opposite of what our goals and responsibilities as the state of Wyoming are to our current situation and to our future generations? These are big questions. These are serious questions. Now, I don't have any problem whatsoever with a private organization or a private philanthropist who want to pool their funds and a ranch family that wants to take advantage of that opportunity and tie themselves down for future generations. That's their right. God bless them. But when we're using tax dollars to do that, then I have a serious, serious concern.
Chairman Simlick.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I got a few comments I'd like to make before moving a committee the whole amendment. My concern with conservation easements is not unlike the last speaker. It has to do with public funding. So I want to take a few minutes, and I'm going to tell you a story. It's a fable, and all good fables start out with a kingdom. And the kingdom in this case is our great state of Wyoming, and there'll be a castle coming in here too a little bit later. 6-7 years ago, when we established this program in our state was flush with money. We gathered up the people's money and we put it into a program in the Natural Resource Trust account, and there's been a lot of good projects that have happened in that. In the last 3 years, now we're seeing conservation easements. Now, times have changed. We've heard hearken out, if you will, from our chairman of our Appropriations Committee about times have changed. We talked about the fuel tax. We talked about it hasn't begun to rain yet. So my point is, things are different now. So we don't have the $1 billion in revenue that was in excess of our budget. We're down to goldenrod, 23 or 25 million. But what do we see here? We see a castle. And in the middle of this castle, we see a small room. And in this small room, there's a few people, very few people. And there's a pot of money there. And it's $6.5 million this year for conservation easements, I think $6.6 million a year ago for conservation easements. Small room, very few people, $6.6 million, House Bill 81. Now, let's go back a few years. We've got Joe. He's got a ranch down maybe in the area where the river is that's named after the same color the money is that's in the pot. Now, Joe's got a beautiful ranch. He's got open spaces. He's got sage-grouse habitat, core area, and he wants to secure the future of agriculture for his place and for his family. So he does a conservation easement. No public money, no federal money, no state money. His choice. That's what Joe wanted to do. And the reason he did it was for estate planning. He recognized, as many of you do, that if you want to diminish the value of your place, you put on a conservation easement because agriculture, the value for agriculture is not the same as it is for development. So I'm not going to go through the numbers. You can figure that out. Depending on what the value of the place is, depending on what the estate tax might be owed, the conservation easement will diminish that value. And the first bite of the apple for Joe and his family is he gets an exemption of $500,000, maybe $1 million. That the details of that's not important. Okay, flash forward again. Joe and his wife are gone. They've got two kids. Now, they want to secure the agricultural part. Oh, did I mention that there was sage-grouse area on this? I did mention that. There's sage-grouse core area and there's open spaces. So Mary, the daughter, she's interested in keeping the place. Her brother is not. So she has to buy the brother out. But she has a parcel of land that's up on the hillside, not very good land, got some trees, next to a community, and the community would like to buy it. Can't do it. Got a conservation easement on it. Because Mary is struggling with paying for this place. I guess I didn't tell you that she went back to a program that we established a few years ago called the Beginning Agriculture Loan Program. This is a loan that Mary got. It's a loan. It's not a grant. Nope. Public money is used, but it all has to be paid off. So Mary's struggling a little bit. She's buying her brother out. And she goes to the castle. Has high walls, door locked, can't get in, small room in the middle. You've heard the story. She knocks on the door and she said, I'm not doing very well. I heard there's a big pot of money here. I'd like to have some of it. And someone answers the door to the castle and they say, well, Mary, we have winners and losers in this program, and your timing is bad. You know, we just don't have money available for you. And, oh, by the way, Mary, if I was you, I would get back to that place and maybe need to get a second job to secure the future of your place. We don't have money for you, Richard. But, by the way, if you don't make it, we'd be interested in buying your place because we have a pot of money here to use for that purpose. So Mary went back home, and that was the end of that deal. Well, there's other people that came to knock on the castle door. One of them was a single mother working two jobs, and she's not in the habit of taking handouts. She never went to the government for anything. But things are tight. Economy's bad. She heard there was some money there. So she went and knocked on the door, and they just said, well, we understand your plight, but we don't have any money for you. You can't be used for that purpose. But they said, I've got good news for you. This program is going to help you. It's going to provide sage-grouse habitat. It's going to provide open spaces. And it's going to secure the future of agriculture. Now, this single mother working two jobs had a very difficult time understanding that. So how is that going to help me? They said, well, it's a complicated, you know, you just have to trust me. So my point is, members of the 62nd, there's a lot of other people knocking on this door of this castle with a little room inside, with just a few people in it. There is a lot of demand for our scarce resources this year. So my suggestion to you is that we think hard about this. At some point, we've got to stop and take a look at this and say, do the value of using public money for these purposes weigh up to the benefits? And I think you've heard some testimony already would suggest that it probably doesn't. So we have these scarce resources. So when we go home 30 days after session, we can tell our constituents we didn't have as much money as what we've had, but we tried to do the greatest good for the most amount of people on and against this bill.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, fellow members, speaking on and for this bill, first I want to disclose that I have sold a conservation easement on our property utilizing state monies. The Wyoming Natural Resource Trust Fund was set up to provide habitat, to enhance habitat, to protect wildlife habitat in the state of Wyoming. I can't believe anyone can believe that conservation easements on ranch land does not protect wildlife habitat. Family ranches are the wildlife habitat of the state of Wyoming. So preserving that habitat is a benefit to wildlife, isn't a justified use of public money, if any money provided to the Wyoming Natural Resource Trust Fund is an appropriate use of public money. Now I want to tell my story. My sister and I, neither one of us have children, and so we sat down and tried to figure out what we wanted to do with our ranch. And we didn't want to see it developed. We wanted to see it retained in agriculture. We wanted to protect the wildlife habitat. We developed a project. We kind of told our neighbors about it. One neighbor joined in. It resulted in over 19,000 acres being protected for family ranching and wildlife. As a part of this deal, one of the reasons my sister and I wanted to do this was because we had no children. So the money we got from that has enabled us to have some money for our future, to secure the ranch's future, and it allows us to be able to bring in to our operation two young men who are our neighbor's kids. Our neighbor was kind of long on kids and short on ranch, and we were long on ranch, short on kids. Kind of the same way with our neighbor, and who was also part of this. And so we were able to bring those kids in into our deal and let them become partners. Now, that story is, what about what goes on in the future? If that hadn't happened, what would have happened? In all likelihood, my sister and I would have sold that ranch to out-of-state interests. Oh, by the way, this ranch now preserves 4 to 5 miles. Part of this project was, and part of it funded by the Game and Fish, was money spent to preserve public fishing easement, bank fishing easement on 5 miles of the Green River. If we hadn't had that money, that ranch most likely would have got sold to out-of-state interests, and most of those out-of-state interests in our area, the first thing they do is lock up the hunting and fishing privileges on those places. Agriculture is lessened on them. You don't have that 100-year being a part of the land. These things are good for family ranches. They're good for Wyoming, and they're good for wildlife. Thank you.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sitting here thinking what I might say, and the testimony you just heard, very compelling, given in the committee. My concern is, as the good Chairman of Ag said, we have 19 projects this year, large projects that are over the 200,000, so they had to come and be vetted. I will speak very highly of the director of the Wildlife Trust. He's been totally open, furnished every bit of information that we could ever ask for. He's just been super trying to help us get the information that we wanted. And the projects, we started out doing these large projects as large projects to take care of wildlife, to take care of habitat, well, wildlife habitat, and sage-grouse core areas. I mean, everything was started in the large project, and I thought that was a good thing. And as been mentioned, we had a lot of money then, and we were putting the money in there. We don't have a lot of money now. And of these 19 projects, 14 of them are conservation easements. So we've just totally flip-flopped from doing large habitat improvements to conservation easements. And I surely will stick up for our last speaker doing what he wants with his land. I will stick up for private property rights till heck freezes over. That's his business. And I would never take that away from anybody. So rest assured of that. The problem I have is we have, this year, we're putting $7 million in. The federal government's putting $43 million in. Now, does the federal government just come along and say, wow, Wyoming, you're good guys. We want to, you know, just give you this money to help tie up these family ranches so they'll be agriculture forever. Sorry, folks, federal government doesn't work like that. There's something in it for them. They are one of the stakeholders, one of the shareholders, if you will. Somebody's going to manage it, and four of these are managed by one of the previous speakers mentioned. Not a very friendly easement holder stands for opposite of what we in Wyoming stand for. And we just handed them the major share of these conservation easements, the four that they are participating in. So as we talk in the committee, I brought up all these points. Good to have the opportunity to bring it up for you. The Wildlife Trust Fund and the large projects that they started to do, when we had a lot of money, you know, I think that was the way to go. Now we've just completely turned, and it's been pointed out that because we got a lot of federal money, we got something like $71 million from the federal government. and that's what's helping fund last year's, the year before, and this year's, and that's why we have so many, 14 out of the 19 large projects that are there. So I don't mind the landowner doing, but I just don't like giving up our ownership of the land to entities, and the conditions of the conservation easement are laid out by whoever is putting the conservation easement on their land. And right now, they make perfect sense. But remember, these are in perpetuity. And the ranching operation that you have today, is that going to be the same in 50 years or 100 years? They just scare me a little bit. That's why I voted no in committee. Just thought I'd give you some background. I've got a lot of information on each one of those, as the bill does. I've got it on one piece of paper this year and last year, if you're interested. Thank you.
Representative Nicholas.
Thank you. Rising in favor of both the amendment and the bill. First of all, I had the opportunity while working for the office of the downstairs to do litigation, and I argued cases involving the sage-grouse in the state of Montana in front of a certain district court judge over there. Had the opportunity for several years to study and understand what's going on with the endangered species listings. And I would just submit that it is very important and I think critical for the state of Wyoming to be as active and proactive as possible to prevent a listing. And what we can do in that regard, you can't imagine the effect it will have in all our lives if that is successful. Number two, in terms of taking pot shots at different conservation entities out there, I would say the testimony that we had before us was that between 90 and 90% of all of these particular easements allow oil and gas development, allow other types of fundraising on these properties. Each easement is crafted differently, and the ones that are using public funds, there is an underlying obligation that we'll continue to allow certain types of development on those properties, just for the very purpose of continuing and providing revenue and resources to the state of Wyoming. And then going back to their good chairman of Ag, if you listen to his first story about the kingdom, what he said is that the father and the mother received a $500,000 tax deduction and benefit to his two children in order to have that conservation easement there in the first place. And so to suggest that Mary is in a better or worse position after her parents are gone is simply wrong. That if Mary was in it, couldn't make the ranch run after having a $500,000 benefit handed down from her parents, she wouldn't have the ranch in the first place. So there's a tremendous asset to the landowner and to the parties involved. I know that there are some people that just aren't happy with this whole concept, but we created the fund. The monies are there to be used for the fund. And I would sense we're not devaluing these properties. In fact, what we're doing is those folks who are affected by the sage-grouse corridor, we're actually taking those ranchers or farmers and saying, we're going to give you value for something that we've taken administratively. We just passed a bill earlier today saying we have an obligation to do that to landowners. So rising in favor of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before I move the committee of the whole amendment, I would just address that last point with respect to the use of conservation easement. That's not my problem. It's the use of public money for conservation easement. My story just implied that you can do conservation easements without any state or federal money. And if you do use state money, then I think the bar is so much higher. So with that, Mr. Chairman, if it's appropriate this time, I'd like to move committee the whole amendment number one to House Bill 81 and ask for your favorable consideration. This goes into Section 5 of the bill on page 36. It just says no distribution of state funds will be made for conservation easements funding authorized under Section 1 or 2 of this act until a dollar-for-dollar cash match of non-governmental funds has been secured. And that is the amendment. I think we tried to make the case of those who had some concern about this bill is that if we believe that we can use in the last 2 years $14 million of public money for this purpose, then it has to have a public need and a public necessity. if we want to make the argument that there's a public need here, then we just ask the people to help support this in a match with state money. So that is the amendment.
Mr. Majority Floyd. Oh, my bad. Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, fellow members, I stand on and against the amendment and for the bill. The amendment changes the rules of the game mid-stride. These individuals and entities that have put up these projects have been told already one set of rules by the state of Wyoming by which we can apply for this money, get approved for this money, and then come to what is a final judgment here. If this were to go in place, and I don't know all the projects, there already is a lot of, if you're a private entity like we were, oftentimes you donate quite a bit of value as it is to that. This is a dollar for dollar cash, so I'm not sure if that means that amount of money that a rancher puts into the project or donates, whether that counts or does not count. But I'd have real concern about this, because if you pass this now, I believe that this will be bore on the backs of the livestock producers or the ranchers that are trying to get these projects done, because it's so late in the game, it'll be their burden to try to come up with the dough. And so I would urge you not to support the amendment and to support the bill. Thank you.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rising on in support of the amendment, I think it's our prerogative to decide what the terms are. This is not changing anything in the middle of the game. This bill is working its way through the process. We have the right and obligation to our constituents to look at this stuff very carefully at every turn, and I think this is a perfectly appropriate amendment to try and infuse some money outside of this state or outside of our institution, outside of our taxpayers, to lessen the impact. The bottom line is, that, folks, that we are in the process of cutting our budgets. And for me, this is an issue of priority. Do you believe that many of our state employees haven't had raises in a long time? And to me, to say, you know, you're not at where you ought to be with your salary, and we're sorry, we can't afford to give you a raise this year. But, oh, by the way, we're going to spend all this money on conservation easements. I think it's a huge disparity and a huge lack of judgment on our part. I would urge you to support the amendment.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's a lot to plow through. I'll do it as quickly as I can. Number one, this whole notion that we're expending public dollars for private gain. Remember, we established the Wildlife Trust Fund. It stands at about, if my recollection is correct, it stands at about $99 million right now, with a target to put $200 million in it. And that fund is not unlike the Hathaway Scholarship Fund. It's a trust fund that's established, and the earnings from that fund go for specified purposes. And we specified in the language that set up the trust fund what those purposes were. And one of them is habitat preservation. So I don't see, and there's talk about, well, the state's putting in $7 million and the feds are putting in $43 million. Great. I wish the feds were putting in $143 million because it's benefiting citizens of our state to have that infusion of money. The board of the Wildlife Trust Fund has purposely tried to leverage its money. It's tried to use for each dollar that it puts in as many federal dollars as it can get. There are other state agencies that put in dollars. Game and Fish, for instance, often participates in these, and other state agencies participate in them. So it's a leverage number. And 7 for 43, I'd say they're doing their job. They're doing very well, and that's what I want them to do. It's a trust fund for wildlife habitat and management, and we're not going to fund state employees' raises out of the Wildlife Trust Fund. That isn't going to be the way it happens. If it comes to the point that somebody wants to propose that we fund employee raises out of the Wildlife Trust Fund, it's going to come in a bill to disband the Wildlife Trust Fund, to totally trash it, pull the money back into the general fund and use it for something else. That's just not an appropriate discussion at this stage of the proceedings. Now, a little bit about real property law. There are things called encumbrances on real property. And there are easements. There are all sorts of restrictions on real property that are created by parties. And when that's done, they're all recorded in the courthouse, and then that, and then they become what's called constructive notice. In other words, you're deemed to know about them whether you actually know about them or not. You could know about them if you just went and looked. So you're deemed to know about them. And these conservation easements are the same conceptually as pipeline easements, road easements, or anything else. So when that encumbrance is recorded on the property, it becomes a part of the fabric of the management and the nature and the existence of that property. And I can understand why there's some angst about this one organization that's holding a conservation easement, but all they're doing is holding it. And they're holding it in the form that it's drafted. And they can't change that. And they can't vary it. And the beauty of the standing committee amendment that we have is that we're making the state of Wyoming a third-party beneficiary. So if they try to monkey with it, if they start fooling around with that easement, the state will have standing to go in there and say, no, the written document specifies this, this is the way it is, and this is the way it's going to be. So with those constraints on it, I'm not particularly troubled by what some of the objectives of these organizations are. They're bound by that document, and they're bound to manage their interest in the property according to the terms and conditions of that document. Now, Sage Grouse Core Area. We, our previous chief administrator of the state made a decision. Some people like it, some don't, but he made a decision that he was going to try to keep sage grouse from being listed in the state of Wyoming. And he did it basically on an executive order basis. We never passed any legislation about that. It's merely through the management of state agencies that he's been able to do that. But we identified a core area for sage grouse in the state of Wyoming. And we identified certain things that are harmful to sage grouse in those areas. The most harmful of all, the worst thing of all for sage grouse, is habitat fragmentation. That means breaking it up into pieces. These birds are, I will not try to defend their intelligence. It can't be done. They're dumber than a post. But they have certain things that contribute to their environment, and one of them is large sagebrush steppes. And habitat fragmentation is one of the worst things that we can do in terms of trying to preserve that bird. We've been successful, and there was an effort to list the sage grouse under the Endangered Species Act. And if you all recall, that effort came down to this. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife said, well, they're a candidate species. What does that mean? What that means is that they could be listed, but they're not going to list them because listing wouldn't result in any better management of the bird than we're doing right now. But that hangs over our head as a candidate species. And if we want to start with habitat fragmentation, and we don't want to start doing other things that are harmful to sage grouse, they can defend on us in a minute. I won't say what kind of a minute, but you know what I'm talking about. And at the point where the sage grouse is listed, you heard the testimony about how many acres in the state are owned by the feds, how many are owned by somebody else, how many are tied up in conservation easements. That pales in terms of the management and the amount of acreage and the restrictions that are going to be put on our state if the sage grouse is listed as an endangered species. So it does us all well, it bodes well for all of us, to keep the sage grouse as a candidate species. And to keep them as a candidate species, we have to maintain a management program that will convince the feds they can't do any better. And when they say they're a candidate species, they say, you know, we could list them, but we've got other things that are more pressing than that. One of the reasons they're more pressing is because we're doing a great job. So we have impacted a lot of landowners' property with the sage grouse core area and all the management that we've done. And I guess we can do it a couple of ways. We can just take a person's property away just by rule. And we can go out and make a rule and say, you know, you can't use your property for certain purposes anymore, and there's no compensation. I don't like that, and I've complained before that when you get so many rules from so many agencies all overlapped, that somewhere, someday, a rancher's going to get up in the morning and go out and open the door and look out and say, where'd my ranch go? It's gone. By rule and regulation, my ranch has just simply been extinguished. I can't use it for anything. As far as I'm concerned, it doesn't exist anymore. That's a scenario that I don't like. The alternative fits very nice with this, that we have a wildlife trust fund. We have the ability to leverage federal dollars and leverage dollars from lots of other agencies, and we can buy the development rights on that property. And when we purchase those development rights, we obtain an asset, they obtain money. And maybe they can't use their property anymore the way they'd like to. Maybe they can't subdivide it. Maybe they can't do some of the things they wanted to do before, but at least we paid them for it. At least there was some quid pro quo involved, as opposed to us just coming out with a rule that says you just can't do it, and a person loses one of the sticks in the bundle in the ownership of their property and gets no money for it at all. So this has never troubled me, to use public money to buy conservation easements. They're not all for sage-grouse habitat, but a lot of them are. You see a lot of references in here to sage-grouse core habitat. You see other references to critical habitat of one kind or another. And there's not a species in the state that can't be listed if we inhibit its habitat sufficiently. There's not an animal in our state that can't be listed. So we have to have some stewardship and some responsibility. And at the same time, we need to take care of our landowners. And I don't like to ever take somebody's property without compensation. Now, mineral development is still possible. The one thing you can't do with these conservation easements is you can't strip it. You just can't. And if it comes down to strip mining, you're done. But technology has been a real help to a lot of us, of these easements, and with directional drilling and some other in-situ mining, different kinds of technology that have come along, there's most of the mineral development that really needs to be done on these lands can be done even when they're subject to a conservation easement. Now, I hear this argument where we're spending tax dollars to devalue the property. That's just not true. We're spending dollars and we're buying something, and I think everybody knows the argument about sticks in the bundle of property ownership, and we're buying one of those sticks. We're buying the development rights. So we gain an asset. It's something that we want. Right now it just happens that the federal tax code is also a benefit to that, and there's federal funding that benefits that. But it all works to our benefit, and if it didn't, we wouldn't be doing it. So we're buying an asset, and the property is theoretically worth less, but the decrease in value of the property, because the one stick that we took out of the bundle we bought, is replaced with money. And I absolutely agree with the argument that was made that if Mary can't get along with the ranch now after her parents got a $500,000 infusion, she's still better off than she would have been, because otherwise her parents probably would have lost the ranch and she wouldn't have had anything. And look, she's not destitute. She might have to sell her land, and I understand the connection to the land as well as the next person, but still, she might have to sell the land, but she's not destitute. It's not like we're running her into the poorhouse, unless she says, well, I won't part with my land, you're just going to have to take care of me. Now, as far as perpetuity with these easements, I would just submit this. In the community where we sit today, I don't think any elk or any deer or any antelope, except maybe a rogue, will ever roam here again. We have permanently changed, altered this landscape where we sit, and in this community where we sit. That is a change in perpetuity, and it is a change that excludes wildlife and eliminates wildlife habitat. And so, what's wrong with paying a person to buy the development rights and try to permanently maintain some habitat? I just think that one is just as feasible as the other. And you all know from your personal experience, once property is settled, once it's divided into 40s, once whatever happens, It never goes back. It never gets, with extremely rare cases, it's never consolidated back into a block of property. And so our habitat inventory is decreasing. And that's what this is designed to do. And I'm as much a private property rights a person as anybody. But I just think that we're going to come to a time when we're going to have a real habitat problem. And I think we have a chance here to address it in a rational way.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, are we still on the amendment?
We are.
Okay.
Now I'm done.
Representative Goggles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure I have a dog in this fight, but I do want to ask a theoretical question of the bringer of the amendment. Given that, theoretically, should the amendment pass and the bill pass, in my estimation, this would create a fiscal pipeline for those dollars that are under a dollar-for-dollar match requirement. With those dollar-for-dollar match creating this fiscal pipeline, would they? How long would they be subject to this fiscal pipeline? And or would they be swept at the end of the fiscal year? That's my question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Grew.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm on the bill against this amendment. I had all prepared, a 55-minute dissertation on the history of conservation easements. I see that's now not necessary. This body's made a policy decision, and we went down this path of saying that this is an appropriate tool to use to help manage wildlife. The funds are here not general dollars out of our budget. They're coming out of this trust, so we should have you keep that in mind. I too have a concern of us using our state dollars for these easements, because I heard it said, and I think it was appropriate, and I can't remember if it was Mary or Sally or somebody with a bag of gold, but we are taking that gold away from other projects. There are some good projects or other non-conservation easement projects in this bill dealing with invasive species, and I think right now maybe we're getting just a little bit focused on the conservation easements. And what I'd ask you to do is vote this amendment down, and then let's look at maybe a different approach to come in and look at getting more of a cost-benefit analysis so that we know exactly, and I'm pointing here to my colleague from Campbell County, that these easements are being used for a very defined and specific purpose. But I'm concerned that we want to try to do this all right now, and I'm concerned that we're bringing this amendment as a hammer to kill the bill. And then I'd ask you to vote no on the amendment, to get the bill forward, and maybe as a body we need to start focusing in on this issue that we are very aware of and that we're all very much concerned of. Thanks.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I stand against the amendment and for the bill. And I, too, have a little story. And I'll make it fast. My wife and I, we climbed over each other trying to find ways to enhance our children's education and our enjoyment for life. And my wife took me to Disneyland and took me to Disney World. I hate Disneyland and Disney World because it's all make-believe and it's not the real world. And there's a guy in a costume that I had my picture taken, and it just didn't seem real to me because I'm from Wyoming. And I went to my share of zoos, and I always felt sorry for the animals in there because I had to take a look where they were and try to imagine what they would be like in the wildlife. And although I saw some animals that I would probably never seen, I like the idea that I live in a state that can go out on any given afternoon with a short drive, and I can see animals in their natural habitat. I'm a dangerous man because I've only taken two science classes in my life. But I understand habitat, And I understand that if you don't have a playground for animals, they're not going to stick around. They can't stick around. And I understand a lot of the arguments, but if we don't have easements, if we don't understand what our wildlife needs to where that it's here forever, that it's here for my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, we've done a disservice. My father and I walked into the house once, and my two oldest sisters, this is about 35 years ago, they were young, and they were about into a fist fight because they were fighting over the grandfather clock that stood right in front of the door when we came home. That grandfather was very important to us because we had curfews, and if that grandfather clock didn't have the right time on there, we would be in trouble. And my dad was upset because each of my sisters wanted to have that. And he finally calmed them down and told them that the grandfather clock was his property. And that if he wanted to give either one of them that grandfather clock, it was within his purview as the owner to do that. And if he wanted, and this would make my sisters extremely upset, give it to me just to spite them. That was within his ability. The federal government is giving us $43 million if we put up seven. For me, to preserve Wyoming wild and wonderful, I think that it's a good deal. Again, against the amendment and for the bill.
Chairman Fenwick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sure you've all heard all you want to. No more stories from me anyway. But if it would, if your comment was brought up about a promise made is not a promise kept with respect to this amendment that we're considering now, I would again ask you to support the amendment. I will dutifully bring back a second reading amendment and say it will not apply to the projects that are pending now. So that would be more of a gradual messaging that if we've made that commitment, we'll do it. But again, on the amendment, it just seems reasonable to me that if we are spending this amount of money on just so very few people, and we think there's a public necessity here, we just ask that the public to come forward, bring out your checkbooks, and help support this program. So, on and for the amendment, and call for the question on the amendment.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the amendment against the bill, just want to bring a little bit more information to this body here. I heard some comments about this really won't affect the mineral rights, but it will. One thing that was said was that it won't allow any more open cast mining. That's the majority of the mining in Wyoming. The majority of the revenue we receive from that particular resource comes from that type of mining. So, yeah. You want to pass this bill? You want to keep going down this track we've been on for a number of years? It will take lands away from our revenue base that support the rest of Wyoming. Support this body. Support our teachers. Support our college. Support our university. I heard some testimony just a little bit ago here that it's a great thing to have these parks in Wyoming. It's great to see wildlife in their natural habitat. I actually don't have a problem with that either, but just recognize what we're doing. If we're going to make Wyoming a big park, this is one of the ways of doing it. I frankly don't think Wyoming should be a big park. I like Wyoming the way it is. I like Wyoming being a state of multiple use, where we have ranching, where we have oil and gas, where we have mining. Some of the best sage-grouse hunting areas I've ever been in were back when some of the main mining areas were extremely active, with water developed everywhere. The sage-grouse were everywhere then. Now we don't allow some of this stuff in those areas, and there's no sage chickens left. Are we on the right track here? we could make this a big park. And again, let's be honest with ourselves. If that's what we want to do, if that's what the majority of the population wants to do, let's do it. Let's get it over with. We'll have a couple of population centers in Wyoming. The rest of the state will be a big park. And this is the track we're on.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Question being called. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 has failed. We are back on the bill. Question being called on... I'm sorry, Representative Connolly. My apologies. Oh, no? Okay. question being called. All those in favor of... Okay. Yes, we are on House Bill 81. And question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Davison's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so with recommendation that House Bill 81 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 81 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Division being called, all those in favor, please stand. House Bill 81 has passed Committee of the Whole. We are now on House Bill 173. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 173 is introduced by Representative Kasparyk, an act relating to public employee benefits, providing for community college police officer participation in a law enforcement plan under the Wyoming Retirement Act, authorizing election by currently employed community college police officers, specifying implementation and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 173, Community College Police Officer Retirement, respectfully reports same back to the House for the recommendation that it do pass for the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhart, Escobel, Moniz, Stubson, and Wallace. Those who voted no, Representative Harshman and Nicholas. It is signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill, Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 173 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the standing committee amendments. And I'll turn this over to the good representative from coal mining country to explain the bill, and I think probably the standing committee amendment, we could probably dispatch of the standing committee amendment right now. Basically, the standing committee amendment, you'll learn about the bill, but once you change retirement plans, the amendment says that you will not be credited from a previous retirement plan. So the committee brought that, and it has to do with moving from the big plan to the law enforcement plan. And it was our view that, okay, you spend time in this big plan, but you want to jump and have a job reclassified, that you don't bring those years in a less benefited plan to a more benefited plan. So unless there's questions on the standing committee amendment, I'd ask for your call for the question.
You ready for the question? Question being called. All those on the standing committee amendment number 1, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We are standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted, and we are back on the committee of the whole amendment. Representative Kasparyk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is just a little bitty bill. Shouldn't take long. It's all about just correcting some fairness within our statutes. Now, in Wyoming, we have a lot of groups that belong to the Wyoming Law Enforcement Pension Plan, And about 10 years ago, I think this body added the college campus police at the University of Wyoming to that group. And that was a fairly big group and a fairly big appropriation. This bill isn't going to ask you for an appropriation. Okay, but this bill is going to ask you, in fairness, to allow the community college campus police that essentially have the same job description, have the same requirements for hiring, the same requirements for job responsibility, the same requirements for post-certification that the University of Wyoming College Police have, and it's going to ask you to add them to that plan. So I'll talk about the bill, and then I'll incorporate in the Committee of the Whole amendment with that. So this bill, again, just authorizes election by currently employed community college police officers and specifying conditions and implementations. If you go to page 2 of the bill, in the first paragraph, it basically talks about how they are brought in to the large law enforcement plan and adds that community college police officer. Section 2 is where we see the majority of change, and this is where I'll discuss the Committee of the Whole amendment. So in Section 2, the Committee of the Whole amendment asks you to, it asks you on page 1, line 5, to add specifying after and to insert conditions. And on page 2, line 13, after 2, it asks you to insert a little A. So on that, it just says coverage of a community college police officer as a law enforcement member under Wyoming Statute 9-3-432, as provided by Section 1 of this Act, shall commence on July 1, 2013, unless the officer elects to continue participation in the Wyoming Retirement Act as a general member. So the individual does have the choice. The election shall be made by providing notice to the Wyoming Retirement Board, not later than April 30, 2013. And then once an election is made, it cannot be rescinded. If you look at the amendment, let's see, Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, begin on line 9, we're inserting a B. And we'll walk through this. Basically, you got to first delete the Standing Committee Amendment, but that's just a little thing, too. Okay, on line 11, a person who meets the following qualifications may have previous service credit as a general member while employed as a community college police officer counted as service credit as a law enforcement officer. So now we're saying that, okay, they moved to this larger retirement plan and want to have credit, but they can only do that by following certain guidelines. They have to be employed as a community college police officer and a participating general member as of the effective date of this act. They have to meet the qualifications as law enforcement members under the provisions of this act. They can't have received a refund of contributions made as a law enforcement member, or having received a refund of contributions have repaid the refund plus interest as provided under Wyoming statute. And number four, little four, they elect to have, the individual will elect to have previous service credit as a general member while employed as a community college police officer, counted as service credit as a law enforcement member by providing notice to the retirement board no later than April 30th, 2013. And little five, the individual has to pay the difference. So they have to pay to the board the differences between the employee and the employer contribution amounts, which would have been paid as a law enforcement member. And the employee can talk to the employer about that, negotiate with the employer, but it's between the two of them. You know, the bottom line is if the employer chooses not to change that contribution, then it's up to that individual to make that change. And they'll do that by having it examined, and they'll determine an amount that is paid to the board. And that has to be done no later than June 30th of 2013. And then for each person meeting this requirement of this subsection B, the board shall transfer funds from the member's account accumulated as a general member while employed as a community college police officer. So that is the bulk of the bill. It's allowing those people who are law enforcement certified, have to meet post-certification, to participate in the large plan. And if they want to make that service while they were in a general plan whole, they have the option to do that, but they have to pay that difference. So I'd ask you at this time to accept the committee of the whole amendment, unless you have questions, and I guess I see some.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd urge us to vote no on the amendment. You just voted yes on the standing committee amendment. The yes that you just voted for on the standing committee amendment that came out of the Appropriations Committee was that we would not count the service credit. So what this committee, the whole amendment is doing is deleting what the standing committee amendment just did and now allowing them to count their service credit. And just so everyone understands what this is so you can do your 20 years and get out. I mean, that's why you want to get into law enforcement. Everybody wants to figure out a way to get into law enforcement. Prosecutors are always trying to figure out a way to do a bill to get into law enforcement. Every little person that does any type of security is always trying to figure out how to get into law enforcement, into their retirement. Because it's a great retirement. You put in your 20 years, you're out. And then you go find another career, and you got that income coming in constantly. There's a great public policy reason why we do that. Because you're putting your life on the line, you're out there. Plus, you want younger people to be your law enforcement officers. So that's why we have a public policy that wants that law enforcement is for 20 years. You start at the age of 20, you know, just out of high school, you get hired on with a PD, and you serve, and by the time you hit the age of 40, you get to retire. And most of them do about the age of 40, and then they go find other occupations. What we did, the other way we do this is understanding Highway Patrol is actually not in the law enforcement retirement. We actually took Highway Patrol, Game and Fish Wardens, and DCI, our criminal investigators. All of them are actually in a different retirement program. They're not in the 20-year and out program. They're in the you turn 50, you can retire program. So our Highway Patrol guys have to wait till they're at least 50. If I was doing this, I would have moved them maybe to that one, because that one actually makes a little bit more sense to me, to put them into that one. Putting them into law enforcement, I think, is the wrong idea, and I certainly don't think they should get to count their credits from the big plan. If they're in the big plan, there's mechanisms there. But, you know, just to remind everyone, we got the big plan. I don't know why they call it the big plan, but I think because everybody's in it. Pretty much all our state employees are in the big plan. And that's where you got to wait, you know, the rule of 85 or when you turn 60. You can retire in the state of Wyoming. And then you got your Highway Patrol, Game and Fish, DCI, they get to retire at the age of 50. And then you got law enforcement in and out at 20. And we also have the judges retirement program. They're all different programs. My preference would have been, if you're doing anything with these guys and you're taking them out of the big plan, maybe move them to the Highway Patrol, Game and Fish, DCI plan. But if you're going to put them into law enforcement, I think you stick with what appropriations said, was don't do the service credit. So I'd urge you to vote no on the committee of the whole amendment, and then we need to take a serious look at the actual bill as a whole.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It strikes me that people wouldn't go through this process if they didn't think there was a big advantage for them and so on. But on page one, Romanesque 5, it talks about a community college employer may contribute the difference to the in the employer's amount. So that would sound like even the employee may not even have a skin in this game, but whoever his employer is, one of the colleges that we also fund, I have a little concern that we're having people get into a very, very generous plan, probably at the risk of jeopardizing the financing, and then when you immediately override an amendment, a standing committee amendment that was passed by the House, I would urge a caution on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1.
Representative Casperick.
Okay, to give a little more clarity on the issues that were brought forward, again, these employees aren't security officers. They're community college police officers. They have the same job description, same requirements as the UW campus police officers who are in the law enforcement plan, and this body brought them into that plan several years ago at quite an expense to the state. Answering the question about who pays, once the election is made for the individual to go into the law enforcement plan, the individual pays at the higher contribution fee, and the community college would also pay at a little the difference between what they're paying now for the small plan and the law enforcement plan. There was no opposition, you know, from the community colleges or from the community college commission. They were there. They didn't rise in support of it, but they didn't rise in opposition. It was supported by the chiefs of police and that other law enforcement group that is in this plan. So again, I just ask you to consider this a bill giving fairness to those officers who have the same job description as the University of Wyoming campus police, have the same requirements, same certifications. Allow them to spend their own money to make themselves whole and be part of the rest of their brethren. Thanks.
Chairman Gingrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess that brings up a few questions, because it's my understanding majority of the community colleges actually hire out their security to security guards. There's only a few that actually have on their employment roles these police officers. And I also see a real distinction between the UW police force and community colleges. I'm familiar with the UW police force, and you know, one of their members used to sit right here, and that was a police force. That was a mini town police force. They're managing, you know, over 12,000 students. That one made sense to me when we did that. The community college one, I'm having trouble with making that jump, that they're the same as the UW police force that's dealing with, you know, 12,000 students. And I guess my big question is, how many community colleges are actually hiring police officers, and how many actually contract that out to security?
Representative Casperick.
There is differences in how the community colleges go about this, and most of them do not require post-certified employees and hire security offices. I think looks like one or two that may contract out to local police force. So we're not talking about a lot of employees. We're talking about just a few employees who are classified as campus police with the same requirements and eligibilities as those at UW. So they may only be one officer, they may only be one or two officers, and they're not responsible for the same numbers that we would see down at the University of Wyoming with their students and faculty. But they are seeing over 1,000 people within their responsibility. So again, I'd ask you, if there's no further questions, I'd call for the question on the amendment.
Question being called. We're voting on committee of the whole amendment number one. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. All opposed, say no. Committee of the whole amendment number one has failed. We are back on the bill. Representative Kasberg.
Sensing the mood of the body, I'll call for the question on the bill.
Is there any further discussion? Okay, none. Seeing none, question having been called. All those in favor of Chairman Harshman's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the favorable recommendation that bill number 173 do pass, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no.
No.
Having failed a roll call vote, a standing vote is required. Those in favor, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. More than 10. Okay, having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
No.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
No.
Flake.
No.
Blevins.
No.
Flickery.
Excused.
Flickery excused. Brown.
No.
Burkhart.
No.
Bird.
No.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Coleman.
No.
Connolly.
No.
Davison.
No.
Eklund.
No.
Eklund.
No.
Esquivel. Filer.
No.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
No.
Gingery.
No.
Goggles.
No.
Greer.
No.
Green.
No.
Halverson. Harshman,
no.
Harvey,
no.
Hunt,
no.
Hutchings,
no.
Yagi,
no.
Kasparic,
aye.
Kirkbride,
no.
Croker,
no.
Krohn,
no.
Larson,
no.
Lockhart,
no.
Laux,
no.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
Miller,
no.
Moniz,
no.
Nicholas,
no.
Northrup,
no.
Patton,
no.
Paxton, Petroff,
aye.
Pieperinen,
no.
Reeder,
no.
Simlek,
no.
Summers,
no.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
no.
Throne,
no.
Wallace,
aye.
Walters,
no.
Watt,
no.
Wilson,
no.
Winters,
no.
Zwanitzer Dan,
no.
Zwanitzer Dave,
no.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 10 aye, 49 no, 1 excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 6-6B, House Bill 173, having failed, a roll call vote is indefinitely postponed. We are now on House Bill 177. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 177, as introduced by Representative Crone, an act relating to the Hathaway Student Scholarship Program, modifying requirements for the Hathaway Success Curriculum as specified, specifying applications, clarifying success curriculum waivers, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, in Committee Number 4, Education, who was referred to House Bill 177, Hathaway Success Curriculum, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass for the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Connolly, Hunt, Northrop, Paxton, Piperinen, Summers, and Teeters. Those who voted no, Representatives Freeman and Patton, and as signed by Representative Connolly, Vice Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Teeters?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 177 do pass. I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And the Standing Committee Amendment, if you'll turn with me to page 3 of the bill and track it in, deals with the foreign language requirement. It deletes the period on line 15 and adds the word or, so that you'll have be required to take at least one that is at least one foreign language consecutively in grades 9 through 12 or two sequential years of instruction in a native language of being a Arapaho or Northern Shoshone or two sequential years of sign language. So for discussion at this point, I would ask you to vote aye on that, and then we can consider that in totality with the rest of the bill unless there are those that would choose to object right now. If not, I would call for the question.
Question having been called on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, all those in favor please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted, and we are on to Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think at this point it would be best to have a discussion about the bill and an introduction of what the bill does, and I would turn that explanation over to the good representative from Cody. And we need to hear what the bill does before we discuss the Standing Committee Amendment would be my preference.
Good idea, Mr. Chairman. My apologies. Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring before the body this afternoon House Bill 177, which intends to make a good program better and to maintain the rigor that's contained in the current Hathaway Scholarship Program while at the same time expanding opportunity for other areas of students. Quite simply, ladies and gentlemen of the 62nd, what this bill does is open up opportunities within the success curriculum of the Hathaway Scholarship for students who are in fine and performing arts and also students that are in career technical areas. It is well known that the Hathaway Scholarship Program is recognized nationwide as being a wonderful program and one that is other states' model across the country. And a reason for that is because it rewards academic rigor. It rewards students who take a variety of programs that are difficult within the success curriculum and provides that scholarship opportunity for those successful students. The purpose of this bill is not to change anything except expand the opportunity for those students that we have quite a few of throughout the state of Wyoming that are interested in fine and performing arts, that excel at fine and performing arts, and that are involved in career and technical education and excel in that as well. And I don't think there's any question that across our state we have great numbers of students who are excellent in those areas. And this bill is intending to create that new opportunity. So walking you through the bill briefly, there's four areas, as the body is likely aware, there's four areas or four different tiers of the scholarship, the Hathaway Scholarship. And the first section there on page 2 talks about the honor or performance scholarship. That's the highest. Those are the highest levels within the scholarship program. The rigor would remain the same under this existing version. So everything that's listed in the success curricula as is would remain. None of that would change. This would what the bill would do in line 7 on page 2 all the way through line 17 is add an additional option for those students that are interested in fine arts, performing arts, or career and technical education. So basically, it stays the same as in those higher tiers. The requirements stay the same, but it also adds some additional opportunities for those students in the arts and in career tech. And I think that's important because we want to maintain the rigor of the program. We want to maintain what we have in that program. As we move into page 3, and you'll note on lines 8 through the end of the page. That's a little bit different. And under the Opportunity Scholarship, a lower level of that scholarship, it basically gives students more of a menu of what to choose from. So that foreign language component will not be required in that section, but it would give those students at that level an opportunity to do foreign language, arts, or career tech. And that's also the situation in the makeup of the bill on page 4 and heading into page 5 for the provisional scholarship. So you would, once again, give those students the opportunity with foreign language, with the career tech, or with the arts. So it provides that flexibility in the lower levels of the Hathaway scholarship. Finally, on page 6, there's a provision that would be added that would allow for a waiver. I would envision that waiver would be for the smaller districts that would not be able to provide all of the program curricula as described in the bill. I know there will be an amendment that we'll be discussing whether that's appropriate or not, and that's certainly up for debate. So I think it's also important to mention to the body that in the committee hearing on the bill, there's broad support for these changes. The university that's across the hill, the 7 other places around the state of Wyoming that educate post-secondary students are all in support of this. There's also support from career and technical agencies across the state. So I think that if you look at this bill, it's very balanced. It maintains the rigor. It provides opportunity for these students, and I would urge the passage of this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would open it up for questions.
Representative Wilson.
I do have questions and comments, but are we going to work this bill before the Committee of the Whole amendment?
If the Committee of the Mr. Chairman, if the Committee of the Whole amendment, we could do those next. That would be appropriate.
Chairman Hogan. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just comments on the bill, and if you have the bill in front of you, I would just tell folks to really be cautious. This bill is an old friend. It's been around since the first days we instituted the Hathaway. And nothing is done without teamwork. It takes a majority of us and a majority down the hall, but how this deal really came about, we had a lot of money. We had significant federal mineral royalties, filled up the school side, filled up the school CapCon side, and so we had a choice to make. Could we do something like this and endow it forever? And this fund now is over $500 million. And with that, also another over $100 million for endowed professors at the university and community college. So it all kind of came with an idea of just the professors. And us guys in the house, we fought for these scholarships. And when it finally came down to a third reading amendment substitute bill on a late Friday night in Education Committee, the Hathaway Scholarship was born. And then the work began. We had this committee, and we met multiple times for a couple of years, and we studied what other states do. There's about 24 other states that have plans similar to ours, a merit-type plan. And none of them, though, are funded like ours. Everybody else generally funds theirs, or they run the lottery to fund a portion of it. But here's what's happened to everybody else's fund in the United States. You start this deal, we went out and did the research. The keys, really, on upping our performance in college are two things, math and science. That's it. That's the research, math and science. And foreign language, which was a University of Wyoming requirement, got in on a split vote on the very last meeting. But it's math and science. That's what all the research shows. But what's happened around the United States is that folks in these bodies just cannot resist opening this scholarship up a little bit wider for more people to qualify, few more folks to get in, and then pretty soon it becomes an entitlement. And then everybody's got this scholarship. And the idea was that it's about merit. It's about hard work. It's about getting good grades in high school. And so really all we require is an extra year of math, because you only have to have 3 to graduate high school in this state. So we require a fourth year of math. You only need 3 years of science, so we require a fourth year of science. And then we said with foreign language, 2 years of a language, but you can actually count one of them that every kid in this state takes in junior high. Every student in Wyoming takes a junior high foreign language. It's part of our standards.
And so they can count. If they take Spanish in 7th grade, they can take Spanish 1 in 9th grade and fulfill a requirement. So it's not too onerous. Okay? So what this bill does, if you flip it over, first of all, it talks about the honor scholarship. And that's our top scholars. And for 1 year, it's going to be it's going to keep the foreign language, and then you'll have a choice of either fine and performing arts or career vo-tech, and you have to take both those 9 through 12. So you can't count any, and kids, I have a 7th grader who's taking woodshop now. Well, we're not going to count that in this bill. Then it takes the opportunity scholarships, and it says, well, foreign language or CTE or fine and performing arts. So it's not about choice. I think it's about, if you look on page 2, line 4, the last word is shall. So now we're going to require our top students to take that extra math, science, totally agree, that's what all the research supports, take that foreign language, but now it says shall take one of these areas, 2 in fine and performing arts or take 2 in career and vo-tech. So there's nowhere in there about choice. It says shall. That's all new language, folks, lines 7 through 17. So here we are. Our high schools in this state either have a 7-period day they're working on today, so that means in 4 years a student has 28 options to get credits to graduate. Usually it's 22 to 24 credits to graduate. So they've got, and many of these are already required in local graduation standards, or they're on an 8-period day where they got 32 options. So here we are, we're reducing choice more now for parents and for kids. And so I heard this deal about broad support. And I've had one email about broad support, and it wasn't any of these folks who were referenced, but it said in there, the email said it was supported by all the parties involved. So, and I know who the parties are. It's not the kids, and it's not the parents, I'll tell you that much. The parties involved really are those folks who teach in these areas, because then they get a guaranteed clientele. And ever since this foreign language thing has gone in, it's been really, they've just had heartburn over this. And the foreign language, I submit to you, is such a small piece of this. And the Senate has hung on to it, but the math and the science are huge. And if you're going to be a welder, algebra is still important for welders. Geometry is still important for welders. Now, their examples and their content might be different, but the same skills are required in all these vo-tech areas. And I just encourage us to be careful. We've seen this bill over and over again. It's got just a little bit different twist disguised under choice. But I'd tell you, the word says shall, and it's about the parties involved, really, or those folks who teach in those areas to keep the guaranteed clientele. And I say, that's no way. If you're a teacher in those areas and you offer an inspiring program, right, they will come. You build it, and they shall come. And that's the way it works. And so on and against the bill, and I think all the amendments, I guess we'll talk about them in a minute. So thank you.
Representative Thumb. Mr. Chairman, I suggest that we go to the amendments, and then I'll address those concerns at the end. Thank you.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that Standing Amendment or House Amendment Number 1 be considered and approved. If you look at, let me get the right one. If you look on page 2, what it does is after line 6, it puts in except provided by this paragraph 6 of this subsection, foreign language, 2 sequenced years of the same foreign language, which need not be taken consecutively, at least one of which will be taken in grades 9 through 12, 2 sequenced years of instruction in a native language of the Eastern Shoshone or the Northern Arapaho, or 2 sequenced years of instruction in American Sign Language, either of which need not be taken consecutively, but at least 1 year of which is taken in grades 9 through 12 may be taken in fulfillment of this paragraph, and then it goes to or. The other part that it does is on page 2, it takes out subsections and puts paragraph. that's what it technically does. And frankly, I couldn't follow it very well and had to go to the sponsor of the bill to make sure it did what I wanted it to do. As was said before, this is an old friend. We had a great discussion with the Senate 2 years ago. And anyway, I'll give you a little bit more background. What the bill does now is it says that you can take 2 years of foreign language. You have to take 2 years of foreign language for the Upper Hathaway. And then what you have to do is you have to either take 2 years of fine and performing arts or 2 years of career and technical education. This was done to increase rigor, to be very honest, and it's for, as we said before, the Hathaway scholarship, which is absolutely wonderful. And there's reasons for that. If you've gotten the emails that I've got, you listen to people that say how the fine and performing arts aids in brain development, and the same thing with the foreign languages. And the current technical people like it because now what happens is there's a requirement for the top end to take a career in technical education. This is one way to raise rigor, and I'll admit to that. But this bill, in my opinion and in my experience, has two unintended consequences. If you look, I handed out a handout from the high school that I used to work at. And what they did is they took what their enrollments were when the success curriculum was established. And it's not very polished, and I was going to redo it, but I figured it would be better to give it to you in the raw as they calculated it. But if you look just even on the front page, what's happened is since we've come up with the success curriculum, the drafting program that we have, or we had in that particular school, has gone down almost 69%. If you look at the welding, it has gone down 28%. If you look at wood technology, 18%. The building trades, where people learn how to build houses and construction, it went down 78%. On the automobile classes that we had, it went down 52%, which is interesting to me because at the college that I work at, we just doubled the faculty and added on to the programs because automobile technology is so important. If you look at the business department, and they have it by teachers there, and I took out the teachers' names on there, but on the business department, 40% reduction. And you can go on and see all of that. And if you even go to the back, you would think the foreign language totals would go up even higher. And if you look, that's indeed the case. But what I would really like to point out is when you get to the third year and the fourth year, where all the benefits of taking a foreign language, in my opinion, is harvested, you have a program that has been reduced a lot. I came here 2 years ago with basically the same information, and I was pretty passionate about saying we can't have that. What this amendment does is it says 2 years of foreign language, 2 years of fine and performing arts, with an or between there, and the last one, or. You take two of one of those instead of two of foreign language and 2 years others. The problem is even though numerically it says that you have lots of opportunities to take all these classes, even with the additional classes, but in the reality of a school schedule, what happens is you have conflicts, and you cannot guarantee that these kids can take these classes. And since I was here 2 years ago, I have a new job, and I go into other schools. smaller schools, because the school that I used to teach at used to be one of the top 10 schools or 10 largest schools. It had trouble maintaining its career and technical education. It had trouble continuing its foreign language after the first two semesters. The smaller schools even have more problems. And to add this to them, you're going to see even more problems with them being able to schedule that. The second argument that I have comes from practicality. As a legislator and as in my possession, I go to a lot of local gatherings where they talk about the workforce in Wyoming. And what is reported over and over again is that 60% of the jobs in Wyoming in the very near future is going to require post-secondary education. Now, the automatic extension of that is oh, we got to send everybody to college. And that's not the case. We do need to send more people to college, and if you've been around, you've heard of the engineering shortage. But you also have other professions that are short also. We need AA degrees, two-year degrees in specific areas. We need certificates to where the people are traded. One of the mining operations in the county that I reside, I went to the plant manager where he's given a presentation, and he repeatedly said that they could hire 50 mechanics today, or this year, I should probably say. And after that, every 10 years, every year, they could add 10 more. I've gone to where the oil and gas industry continually talks about their desire to hire only people that have AA degrees in their long-term employment. Those are people that are in instrumentation, oil and gas technology, instrumentation, welding, industrial maintenance. The Hathaway scholarship, or this success curriculum, is set up for the traditional academic people. They're the people that are going to go for a four-year degree, okay? And you could take a hard line on saying, well, that's good, and if we have somebody that's going to go into career and technical education, we should require that also, primarily the foreign language area. But it's been my experience that the people that are going to go into career and technical education want to get on with their job right away. They want to start taking the classes that will help them in their career pursuits right away. And the second thing is a lot of them are first-generation college. Okay? As much as I think that they should probably take a foreign language, they're not inclined to do that. When we come up with a success curriculum without this amendment, that means that they will have to take all the classes that the good coach talks about. And if they don't, they don't get the higher award in the Hathaway scholarship. I put together some all sorts of numbers and stuff, but in my opinion, if we go on without this amendment where it says or, we're pretty short-sighted. We do need engineers, okay? We need people with four-year degrees in accounting and other areas that would help our local industry. But we also need these career and technical people. And if they do the success curriculum to where that they take the math, they take the English, they take the social studies, and all those other classes, they have the high GPA, and they have the high ACT, I think that they should also be entitled to the high awards in the honors Hathaway. The way that it says right now is if you're going to be an engineer, we'll pay for all of it. But if you don't take just foreign language the way that they have it right now, what happens is we're going to make you pay a little bit, not all of it, but a little bit. My contention is we need all of those professions in order to go forward. As it was said before, this was an old friend. This house 2 years ago stood up and said, foreign language or fine and performing arts or career and technical education. I believe that that's the right approach. I think that it benefits the entire range of students within the state of Wyoming. I think it benefits Wyoming's industrial partners, and I hope that you will vote for this amendment.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not against this amendment. I was actually going to speak against the bill, but seeing as I think the amendment actually even makes it worse, I'll speak now. I'm a big supporter of arts education. I have done painting in my own life. I'm a big supporter of career technical classes, but I think this change would really do students a disservice. And I'll just throw in here, besides my prepared remarks for the appropriations chairman, interestingly, they have done research that finds that the highest way to get the highest score on the ACT in math is to take 4 years of math. The second highest way to get the highest score in math is to take 4 years of foreign language. So those two subjects are actually closely linked in the brain. My first point is there is sufficient room, and I admit I live here in town, so I'm speaking from a bigger school perspective, but if a student were to take the 17 Hathaway required classes plus the two health and PE classes that the school requires, with the required 28 credits, they have 8 credits left over. So that's already 2 classes a year. Okay, so if they were going to take out the foreign language, then there would be, I mean, if they're going to say they can't offer the foreign language at all, I don't know what the students are going to be doing with all that spare time. There's plenty of room for students to take both. I have a son who just graduated from high school. My daughter is in high school at present. I spent a lot of time with those books. And my kids have taken fashion merchandising, carpentry, foreign language, all those things at the same time. My second point is that actually foreign language is a career class. 10 years ago, a national periodical did a survey of top business executives and said, what is the skill most commonly lacking in your worker? And foreign language skills was the top skill listed as lacking. Then a couple of years ago, another survey was done of 431 human resource officers. They were surveyed. These were people that hired high school graduates, community college graduates, and four-year college graduates, and 63% of them said that foreign language skills were increasing in importance more than any other basic knowledge or skill. So the thing is, people don't study foreign language just so they can read Don Quixote in the original, okay? These are people who work in the hospitality field, who work in law enforcement, who work in healthcare. We have, from Wyoming, international jobs in trade and in the energy sector working overseas. I truly think that by backing off from the foreign language training, we are doing our youth a disservice. I also happen to know from a couple years ago in my other life, I've discovered that every single school district in Wyoming has at least 2 years of foreign language. Every single one. And I looked also at the state to the north of us in the eastern part, the states to the east of us in the western part. We are the only state that actually had foreign language programs in even the smallest school district. I was astonished. So they are there at present for the students to take advantage of these opportunities to really do what they want with a lot of the jobs and the vocational technical things that they're doing. And the law already provides for exceptions. So if the one teacher that they have moves out of town, they can waive that. But I just think we'd be doing our students a real disservice if we back away from encouraging kids to do what admittedly they don't always want to do, but it's the same thing with algebra and science. They don't always want to do it. That's true. But we know that it will be much better for their future employment.
Representative Crown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the amendment, I really think the way that this bill is framed and the way that it's written is it's written in a very narrowly tailored way. It's also a good balance between the extra requirements in the higher level of the Hathaway and the flexibility in the lower. So I'd urge the body to oppose the amendment. And I would call for a question on the amendment. Oh, unless there's more debate.
Question having been called on committee of the whole, amendment number one, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no.
No.
Committee of the whole, amendment number one failed. We are back on the bill. We're on the committee of the whole, amendment number two. Representative Northup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move for the favorable. I move that we accept the committee of the whole number two and ask for a favorable passage of it. Committee number of the whole number two is essentially striking out the new language on page six. I ask for this amendment because I can see the abuse that will come from districts when a teacher leaves a certain position and they decide that they don't have to fill that position during that particular school year. Thank you.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speaking on and for the amendment, this is a first for the Hathaway project, absolute first. We come up with a success curriculum. We outline what our expectations are. We put it in black and white, and everybody knows what it is. And then we come along with an amendment like this and says, but you don't have to do that. All you need is a waiver. Just get a waiver. The curriculum wasn't available. The school superintendent, just the school superintendent, can provide a waiver, and then it says the department shall waive any requirement. Not may, but shall. This is opening the destruction, in my mind, of the very spirit of the success program and of the honors program of Hathaway. So I urge you to delete that from the measure and urge your adoption of that amendment.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you. I would also urge the body to adopt the amendment. We have been operating on under the language on page 6, too little I, since the inception of the Hathaway Scholarship, and I think it would be throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And this is also, I believe, a separate policy discussion that is not even concurrent with the other discussion about foreign language and fine and performing arts. But I would urge you to vote aye.
Chairman Hartman.
On and against the amendment, and again, I think for the good bringers of the, or excuse me, on and for the amendment, the good bringers of the amendment spoke very well about it. And this is what happens. It has happened in states all across the country. First, we expand the success curricula so more people can kind of fill their niche without taking math and science, in this case, foreign language, and then, of course, the waiver. That's the next. And then pretty soon we have an entitlement. And then pretty soon it's generally funded. And here we are. So it all starts today. So on and for the amendment.
Representative Patton.
Thank you. I want to be clear now. We're talking about an amendment that removes the section. It takes the waiver out of the bill. So there will not be a means for a waiver. So to do this strengthens the purpose of the success and the honors program in the Hathaway. It doesn't weaken it and it doesn't lessen it. We're trying to keep it as whole as it was when it was originally written and as it was originally intended. So my urge to you is to vote for this amendment. Do as you will with the bill.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Question having been called, all those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 177, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 has been adopted, and we are back on the bill. Representative Grimm. Chairman Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just before the sponsor of the bill, and give him the last shot to run at it. And again, I would just say, I don't know if I have anything new to say. I would just say that the Hathaway is our deal. And it was really legislated, conceived in this House of Representatives. It was blocked at the other end of the hall. And there was a group of House members that insisted on it. We fought like heck to get it done. Like I say, 8 o'clock on a Friday night, third reading of 36-page substitute bill for an amendment. And then we worked our tails off studying this. And once again, this is going to happen. And so you folks who are here from 10 years from now, these bills will keep coming. And once this one passes, there'll be another bill, and there'll be another one. And pretty soon, this will be a generally funded operation 20, 30 years from now, and we'll wonder how we got here. So urge your defeat of the bill today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Crum.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to conclude the argument, I certainly appreciate the good Chairman of Appropriations comments and particularly his hard work in putting the Pathway Scholarship Program together. But, ladies and gentlemen of the body, this makes a good program better. It provides opportunity for those students that are in the career tech and the arts programs that have special talents and skills that way. It increases the rigor on the top end, and it provides opportunity all the way through the bill. So I would say that this is a good bill. This makes a wonderful program stronger. We're nationally recognized. Let's pass this. Thank you.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Teeter's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 177 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please stand. House Bill number 177 has passed Committee of the Whole. We are now on to House Bill number 18. The reading clerk will please read the bill. Oh, my apologies. We're now on 155. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
What?
I'm getting signals from the majority floor leader.
Okay.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I was on a roll.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. Mr. Speaker. Motion carries.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg to leave report as follows. House Bill 93, amended. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Bill 94, amended. And further amended. Recommended do pass. House Bill 152, amended. Recommended do pass. House Bill 191, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 26, recommended do pass. House Bill 71, recommended do pass. Representative Brown moved that the Committee of the Whole rise and sit again. Motion prevailed. House Bill 81, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 173, amended. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Bill 177, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. It is signed by Representative Hunt, Chairman.
Representative Hunt.
Mr. Speaker, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Committee of the Whole report has been adopted. Congratulations, Representative Hunt. Brothers and sisters of the 62nd, that was great debate. We got through 9 of the remaining 140 bills. We are now at that order of business of messages from the Senate.
Message number 180. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file number 29, hitchhiking. A's 29, no's 1. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 181. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below failed to pass the Senate third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file number 59, Insurance-Consumer Protections. Ayes 13, noes 17. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 182. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 86, County Offices-Business Days. Ayes 25, noes 5. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 183. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file number 91, County Commissioner's Election to Modify Numbers. Ayes 30, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 184. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file 115, Protective Services Investigation Amendments. Ayes 30, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 185. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 124, Frivolous Liens. Ayes 30, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Number 186. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 126, Overweight and Oversized Vehicles. Ayes 29, noes 1, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 187, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file number 127, Lien Notice. Ayes 29, noes 1, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 188, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 90, Administrative Control of Acquired Institutional Lands. Ayes 23, noes 7, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 189, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file number 132, Silencers, Suppressors, and Automatic Weapons. Ayes 23, noes 7, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
We're now at that order of business of reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 200, Concealed Weapons-Government Meetings, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Gingrey, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, and Watt, one excuse. That's Representative Connolly, signed by Representative Gingrich, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 216, Deadly Weapons in a Courtroom, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Gingrich, Halverson, Croker, and Crone. Those who voted no, Representative Miller, Walters, and Watt. One excuse, Representative Connolly, signed by Representative Gingrich, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 96, Election, Ballot Access, and Registration, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Lickery, Eklund, Goggles, Kirkbride, Laux, Madden, Northrop, Petroff, and Simlick, signed by Representative Madden, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 168, Domestic Partnerships, Rights and Responsibilities, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Berger, Blickery, Byrd, Green, Paxton, Petroff, Danswalenser. Those who voted no, Representative Gay and Kirkbride, signed by Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 212, Impact Assistance to Local Governments, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Greer, Kasparic, Larson, Lockhart, Reeder, Summers, and Winters. It is signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 223, Public Records, Institutions of Higher Education, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Greer, Kasparic, Larson, Lockhart, Readers, Somers, and Winters, and is signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 132, Chiropractor Licensure Amendments, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Barlow, Coleman, Filer, Green, Harvey, Kasparic, Larson, and Throne. One no vote, Representative Wilson, signed by Representative Green, Vice Chairman.
We're now at that order of business of committee announcements.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number two will continue the referral process on House Bill 176, School District Natural Gas Fueling Facilities. And tomorrow, January 29th, Tuesday, at 10 minutes after noon recess, Mr. Speaker, your committee will hear Senate File 105 and Gross School Capital Construction. And, Mr. Speaker, after on adjournment tomorrow, 10 minutes upon adjournment, the Joint Appropriations Committee will meet to work on the General Appropriations Bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Gingery.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number one will meet tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. in room 302 to hear House Bill 103, Regulation of Firearms, State Preemption, House Bill 104, Firearm Protection Act, House Bill 105, Citizens and Students Self-Defense Act, and then we will continue to take testimony and work the bills over the noon recess also, and that will also be in room 302.
Chairman Simlett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number five, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet tomorrow morning, January 29th at 7 a.m. and 8:11 to hear the following bills carried over from before: Agriculture Operations 126, House Bill 109, Interstate Shipment of Meat, State Inspected Meats, House Bill 134, Private Roads, and House Bill 207, Neglected and Abandoned Animals Grant Program. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number four, Education, will meet 5 minutes upon adjournment, where we will address House Bill 165, Remedial Classes Tuition Free, and House Bill 166, Hathaway Student Scholarship Program.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet 10 minutes upon adjournment in room H17, where we will hear House Joint Resolution 2, Social Security Benefits, Terminal Illness Situations, and House Bill 97, No Abortion After Heartbeat. Tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., we in same room H17, we will hear House Bill 145, Insurance Coverage of PKU, and House Bill 46, Unfair Employment Practices.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet tomorrow night, 10 minutes after adjournment, in room 302 to hear the following bills. House Bill number 205, Motor Vehicle Weight Restrictions Exceptions. House Bill 232, Highway Speed Limits. House Bill 229, Regulation of Natural Gas as a Transportation Fuel. And House Bill 114, Liberty Preservation Act.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9, Minerals Business and Economic Development, will meet on Wednesday morning at 7 o'clock, and that's the reason I'm doing this announcement now, to hear Senate File 2, Oil and Gas Conservation Commission filings, Senate File 3, State Oil and Gas Supervisory Qualifications, and Senate File 26, amortization of certain radioactive waste facilities. In addition, there will be two House bills, Senate File 226, Enhanced Oil Recovery Carbon Dioxide Certification, and last but not least, House Bill 198, Wyoming Legal Tender Act.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7, Corporations, will meet tomorrow, Tuesday, January 29th, upon noon adjournment. First bill up will be House Bill 77, Wyoming Lottery, and at about 1 o'clock we will then hear Campaign Finance, Campaign Funds, Personal Use, House Bill 99, followed by House Bill 187, Campaign Finance.
Chairman Davison.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was asked to display this. If any of you have heard about our MUSCLES program in Wyoming and the funding that we put toward that to keep this animal from getting into our water lines, this is a pipe that was in the Great Lakes area for 6 months, and this is what the MUSCLES did to it. So we invested in a program several years ago to keep this out of Wyoming by inspecting boats and making sure before they get in our water that they're clean. So I'm just going to leave it up here for each of you to look at, but just be aware that this is one program that we've invested in Wyoming, and we've been lucky we haven't got them into our state yet. Thank you.
Any other committee announcements? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. Speaker, don't forget tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock or Wednesday morning at 7 o'clock if you want to learn something about the Wildlife and Natural Resources Trust Fund. There will be a presentation in room B63. General file for tomorrow. House Bill 155, 156, 18, 123, 201, 203, 223, 199, 130, 164, 208, 209, 131, 161, 179, 182, 55, 147, 163, 200, 216, 96, 37, 212, 132, and 168. And figure on maybe 6 o'clock tomorrow night before we quit. And if we don't get going, a lot of bills are going to die for lack of time to debate them on general file. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow, January 29, 2013. 9:30 a.m.
You've heard the motion that the House adjourn until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow, January 29, 2013. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House is adjourned. Motion carries. House is adjourned until tomorrow, January 29, 2013 at 9:30 a.m.